In group strategy, the large sword corresponds to a large number of troops, and the small sword to a small number. Is it possible for a small number to fight a large number? We know of several examples where a smaller force has carried off the victory. In my school, I reject this sort of narrow, preconceived outlook. You should examine this well. Schools that use the sword with brute force. It is not appropriate to set up a distinction between a strong sword and a weak sword. If you strike with the intention of producing force, your sword technique will be crude, and it is difficult to achieve victory with crude technique. If you try hard to cut through a human body using force, you will not succeed. If you try to cut through various objects, you will see that it is bad to strike with force. In fighting a mortal enemy, no one would think of cutting him down weakly or strongly. When you want to kill someone, you do not do it strongly, and of course not weakly, but simply in such a way that he dies. In practicing the sword with brute force, if you slap the other's sword forcefully in making a parry, the force will spill over, and that is always bad. If you hit the other's sword with a great deal of force, your sword might break in two. Thus, it makes no sense to advocate using the sword with brute force. In group strategy, if you try to win in a battle through sheer power, with strength in troops, then your opponents will also try to have strength in troops, and they will want to fight with brute force. The two sides will thus be thinking the same way. It is impossible to win in any domain without the principle of the way. In the way of my school, you must never consider the impossible, and you must learn to win in all ways thanks to the power of the knowledge of my strategy. You must work this out well. Schools that use the short sword. Trying to win with only the short sword is not the true way. From ancient times, the large and the small sword have been talked about. This clearly expresses the usefulness of having a long and a short one. In this world, a strong person can easily handle a large sword. There's no point in limiting him to a short sword. When you need a long weapon, you can even take a lance or a naginata. With a small sword, trying to look for a fault in your opponent's attack in order to cut him down, trying to penetrate in close by leaping, or making an attempt to catch hold of the body of your opponent, all these approaches are partial and no good. Looking for a fault as the opening for your attack amounts to submitting to the initiative of the other and should be avoided because you run the risk of becoming entangled with him. When facing many opponents, if you have a short weapon in your hand, the idea of getting close enough to them to fight hand to hand or to catch hold of them is ineffective. If you are particularly trained in the use of the short sword, even when you want to drive back many adversaries by slashing at them, or when you want to leap about freely or spin energetically, all of your sword technique becomes defensive, and you have a tendency to fall into confusion. Therefore, this is not a sure way. To the extent to which it is possible, you must repulse your opponents by getting them to jump about and become disconcerted, while you yourself keep straight with power in order to obtain the victory with certainty. This is the way. The principle is the same for group strategy. To the extent to which it is possible, the essence of strategy is to crush your enemies immediately through the power of great numbers by driving them back all of a sudden. In this world, if you continually accustom yourself in the course of your apprenticeship to certain techniques of parrying, dodging, disengaging, and warding off an attack, your mind will be steered by these ways of doing things, Michi, and you will run the risk of letting yourself be controlled by others. Since the way of strategy is straight and true, it is important to dominate your adversary by harrying him with the true principle. You should examine this well. Schools that have a large number of techniques. Teaching people a large number of sword techniques is turning the way into a business of selling goods, making beginners believe that there is something profound in their training by impressing them with a variety of techniques. This attitude toward strategy must be avoided, because thinking that there is a variety of ways of cutting a man down is evidence of a disturbed mind. In the world, different ways of cutting a man down do not exist. Whether you are an accomplished adept or a non-initiate, a woman or a child, the ways, Michi, of striking, slapping, and cutting are not all that numerous. Apart from these movements, there are only those of stabbing and slashing broadly on the horizontal. Because what is primarily at issue is the way, Michi, of cutting someone down, there cannot be many differences. All the same, whatever the place and situation of combat might be, for example, a place that is closed in with regard to height or width, one must hold the sword without being discomfited by the place. It is from this necessity that the five ways of holding the sword come. All five are necessary. Apart from that, it is not fitting to the true way to cut someone down by pivoting one's wrists, twisting one's body, jumping, or pulling back. Because you cannot perform the act of cutting a man down by pivoting, twisting, jumping, or pulling back. These are entirely futile movements. In the strategy of my school, keep your body and mind straight and make your opponent go through contortions and twist about. The essence is to defeat him in the moment when, in his mind, he is pivoting and twisting. You should examine this well. Schools that insist on the importance of the guard position in the art of the sword. It is erroneous to think that the guard position is essential in the art of the sword. In this world, it is when there is no adversary that one can establish a guard position. The reason is that, in the way of combat, there is no place for the setting up of laws, whether they relate to current custom or present-day rules. In strategy, the point is to do whatever creates a disadvantage for the adversary. What is called the guard or guard position involves having recourse to immobility. For example, to construct a fortress or establish the order of a battle, one must have a powerful and immovable mind, even if the enemy attacks. This is a fundamental attitude. Whereas in the way of strategic combat, it is necessary to take initiative after initiative in any situation. Now, to assume a guard position is to wait upon the initiative of the other. You must work this out well. In the way of strategic combat, you shake the other's guard. You employ techniques he is not thinking of. You get him to panic, to become irritated, frightened. And you defeat him by becoming aware of the cadence in accordance with which he is getting lost in the situation of combat. In this practice, it is bad to take up a guard position, which is waiting upon the other's initiative. It is in this sense that I insist in my school on the guard without a guard. That is to say, even if there is a guard, it is not a rigid guard. In group strategy, you must be informed of the number of your adversaries and the conditions of the place and know your own numbers and the abilities of your camp. The essential is to have an idea of the potential import of these elements when you begin combat maneuvers with your troops. Between the two situations, that in which your adversary has seized the initiative of attack and that in which you have taken the initiative, the disadvantage and the advantage vary from single to double. Firmly setting up a guard position as a preparation to blocking the sword of your opponent and thoroughly beating it back amounts to moving a lance or a naginata about in such a way as to set up a barrier. If you strike your opponent, it is best for you to take the approach of pulling up a stake from the fence to use it as a lance or naginata. You should examine this well. Schools that teach particular ways of gazing. Certain schools teach particular ways of directing the gaze. This teaching varies from one school to another. You are to focus your gaze on the sword, the hand, the face, or the feet of the adversary. But to fasten the eyes in this way on a particular spot is liable to interfere with the mind and is a fault in strategy. I will explain myself by giving some examples. Someone playing ball kicks without fixing his gaze on the ball. Sometimes he kicks as he is stroking his temples, sometimes while catching up to the ball on the run, sometimes as he spins. Once accustomed to it, he has no need to maintain a fixed gaze. The same is true of an acrobat. An expert in this art is capable of juggling several swords while balancing a door over his nose. Things are seen naturally as a result of unremitting training and not on account of looking at them fixedly. In the way of strategy, by accumulating experiences with different opponents, you will learn the lightness or weight of the mind of each one. By practicing the way in this manner, you can see everything that is far away or close, and also assess the speed or slowness of the adversary's sword. Generally, in strategy, you place your gaze on the mind of your opponent. In group strategy, your gaze is directed onto the situation and the state of the enemy troops. There are two things you can do: looking and seeing. It is necessary to look hard, to the point of perceiving the mind of your adversary and the condition of the sight. It is also necessary to look broadly in order to perceive the dynamic state of the battle and the strength and weakness of the moment. You must win like this, in the right way. In group strategy, and also in individual strategy, it is out of the question to fix one's gaze narrowly. As I have already said, as a result of narrow and minutely detailed vision, you will let something big escape you, and your mind will become uncertain, which will lead you to let a sure chance of winning get away from you. You should examine these reasons well and train well. Schools that teach various kinds of footwork. There are schools that teach different ways of moving the feet so as to vary movement from place to place and make them faster. These are, for example, floating foot, leaping foot, hopping foot, stamping foot, and crow's foot. From the point of view of my strategy, all these movements have deficiencies. Floating foot is to be avoided because in situations of combat, there is always the tendency to have the sensation of floating in the feet. Therefore, one should move with firm steps. Leaping foot is not good because at the moment of leaping, there is a pushing off movement, and you make a movement to dampen the impact at the moment of landing on the ground that holds the body back. There is no reason to leap several times in a row during a battle. Therefore, leaping foot is to be avoided. With hopping foot, the mind will be hopping too, and you will not be able to fight effectively. Stamping foot is particularly bad since it involves a weight. There is also crow's foot and several other ways of moving rapidly. But sword combat can take place in a variety of conditions, for example, in a marsh, in a deep rice paddy, or in the mountains, on the banks of a river, in a stony field, or on a narrow path. In some places, you cannot leap or hop, and you will not be able to move rapidly either. In my strategy, the way of moving is no different from normal walking on the road. You move rapidly or calmly in accordance with your opponent's cadence. In all cases, move without the movement of your feet being disturbed, without missing a step, without any excess in your step, with a suitable body posture. Movement from place to place is equally important in group strategy. For if you launch an attack without knowing the intention of your adversary, with imprudent speed, your cadence will be thrown off and it will be difficult to gain victory in these conditions. If your steps are too slow, You will not be able to find the moments when your adversaries become troubled and are on the verge of collapse. One of the elements of victory will elude you, and you will not be able to win quickly. Discern the moment when your adversaries become troubled and are foundering, and do not give them the least chance to catch their breath. Winning in this way is essential. You must train well in this. Schools that stress speed. Speed is not part of the true way of strategy. When you say fast, this means a lag has occurred in relation to the cadence of things. That is what is meant by fast or slow. In whatever the domain, the movements of a good, accomplished practitioner do not appear fast. For example, there are messengers who cover 40 or 50 leagues at the run in a single day, but they do not run fast from morning till night, whereas a beginner cannot cover such a long distance even if he has the wind to run the whole day. In no theater, when a beginner sings following a good, accomplished practitioner, he has the impression of lagging behind and sings with the feeling of haste. In the same way, in the drumbeat for Old Pine, Oimatsu, which is a slow melody, a beginner has the feeling of lagging behind and having to catch up. Takasago is a rather fast song, but it is not appropriate to play the drum too fast. Speed is the beginning of a fall because it produces a deviation in the cadence. Of course, excessive slowness is also bad. The movements of a good, accomplished practitioner look slow, but there is no dead space between his movements. Whatever the domain, the movements of an expert never appear hurried. Through these examples, you should understand a principle of the way. In the way of strategy, it is bad to try for speed. I will explain. In places such as a marsh or deep rice paddy, you cannot move either your body or your legs fast. This is all the more true for the sword. You must not try to cut with speed. If you try to cut with a fast movement, the sword, which is neither a fan nor a knife, will not cut because of the speed. You must understand that well. In group strategy also, it is bad to think of hurrying up in order to attain speed. If you possess the attitude of mind of holding down on the headrest, you will never be late. If your adversaries act too fast, you apply the opposite approach. You calm yourself and avoid imitating them. You must train yourself well in developing this state of mind. Schools that distinguish depth and surface. In questions of strategy, what is meant by surface and what is meant by depth? In the different arts, there is a manner of distinguishing the depth from the entry that refers to the ultimate teaching or the secret transmission. But as to the principle that comes into play at the time of combat with an adversary, you cannot say that you fight him with techniques of the surface and cut him down with those of the depth. In my school's teaching of strategy, you teach techniques that are easy to assimilate for those who are beginning in the study of the way, giving them an explanation that they can understand right away. Observing the degree of their advancement, you progressively give them explanations that direct them toward more and more profound principles. However, in general, you teach them things that correspond to situations they are really in. There is no need to distinguish between depth and entry in the teaching. This can be connected with the adage according to which if you continue to go deeper and deeper into the mountains, you will come out by a different entry. In all the ways, it might turn out that the depth technique is effective or that the entry technique is. With this principle of combat, why should you hide one thing in order to show another? That is why, in the transmission of my school, I do not have written oaths accompanied by penalties. Observing the student's level of intelligence, you teach him the correct way and help him to free himself of the five or six bad ways of strategy. You cause him to enter naturally into the true way that conforms to the principles of the warriors, so that his mind will be free from doubt. Such is the way, Michi, of teaching strategy in my school. You should train well in this. In the Scroll of Wind, I have written succinctly about the strategy of other schools in 9 sections. I should have written about each of these things in greater detail, going from the entry to the depth, but I intentionally avoided mentioning the names of the schools and the names of the techniques. For in every school, the ideas and the explanations concerning such and such a way can vary from person to person in accordance with the way he understands, and every person has his way of reasoning. Thus, there are small differences in thought within a single school. That is why I mentioned neither the name nor the techniques of the schools, thinking about their development in the future. I have outlined the general characteristics of the other schools in these 9 sections. If we observe things from the point of view of the way of the world, and also from that of correct human reasoning, these schools follow partial ways, because one of them is attached solely to length, another touts the advantage of the short sword, and the others are partial because of one single preoccupation, whether it is strength and weakness, or coarseness and fineness. I do not need to be specific about whether I am talking about the entry or the depth of such and such a school, because everybody knows. In my school, there is neither depth nor entry for the art of the sword, and there are no fixed guard positions. The essence of strategy is solely that the mind learns virtue from it. The 12th of the 5th month of the 2nd year of Shōhō, 1645. Shinmen Musashi, for the Honorable Lord Terao Magonojō. The 5th of the 2nd month of the 7th year of Kambun, 1667. Terao Musei Katsunobu, for the Honorable Lord Yamamoto Gensuke. The Scroll of Heaven. In this Scroll of Heaven, I elucidate the way of strategy of the School of Two Swords. The meaning of emptiness is space where there is nothing, and I also envisage emptiness as that which cannot be known. Emptiness, of course, is where there is nothing. Knowing that which does not exist while knowing that which exists, that is emptiness. In this world, some people think of emptiness in an erroneous fashion, interpreting it as not distinguishing anything. This is the product of a mind gone astray. It is not true emptiness. In addition, for the way of strategy, emptiness does not mean disregarding the law in order to practice the way of the warrior. Some also speak of emptiness as existing where they find nothing to do because of many doubts, but that is not true emptiness. The warrior must learn the way of strategy with certainty by practicing the different disciplines of the martial arts, and he should not disregard anything connected with the practice of the way of the warrior. He should put it into practice from morning till night, without tiring, and without letting his mind wander. He should polish his mind and his will, and sharpen the two visions, the one that consists in looking, and the one that consists in seeing. He should know that true empty space is where the clouds of uncertainty have completely dissipated. As long as you remain ignorant of the true way, even if you think you are on a sure way, and that you are doing well in accordance with Buddhist laws, or in accordance with the laws of this world, you will deviate from the true way, because you overestimate yourself and your way of seeing is distorted. You understand it if you see things with the direct way of the mind, and take into account the great code of this world. Know this state of mind, and take as fundamental that which is straight. Conceive of the way with a sincere mind. Practice strategy broadly. Think on a large scale with accuracy and clarity. Think of void as the way and see the way as void. In emptiness, the good exists and evil does not exist. Knowing exists, the principle exists, the way exists, and the mind is void. The 12th of the 5th month of the 2nd year of Shōhō, 1645, Shinmen Musashi, for the Honorable Lord Terao Magonojō. The 5th of the 2nd month of the 7th year of Kambun, 1667, Terao Musei Katsunobu, for the Honorable Lord Yamamoto Gensuke. The texts preceding the Gorin no Sho. The Mirror of the Way of Strategy. Hyōdōkyō. 1. The State of Mind of Strategy. 2. The Way of Looking. 3. The Way of Holding the Sword. 4. About Sword Combat. 5. The Way of Moving from Place to Place. 6. The Way of Holding the Body. 7. The Way of Cutting. 8. How to Change the Situation in the Midst of Combat. 9. Getting the Other to Drop His Sword. 10. Yin in Combat. 11. Yang in Combat. 12. How to Discern the Other's State. 13. Delivering a Blow. 14. How to Take the Initiative. 15. Striking while turning the point of the sword. 16. Attacking the legs. 17. Attacking the hand. 18. How to avoid the point of the adversary's sword. 19. How to pass above the adversary's sword. 20. Moving with sliding steps. 21. Discerning the real intention. 22. The two swords. 23. How to throw a shuriken. 24. Fighting against many opponents. 25. Using the jitte. 26. How to draw the various swords. 27. The ultimate strike. 28. The state of direct communication. Jikitsu. Miyamoto Musashi no Kami, Fujiwara Yoshitsune. The Enmei Ryu. The best adept in Japan. To Mr. Ochiai Chuemon. The auspicious day of the 10th year of the Keicho period, 1605. The Mirror of the Way of Strategy, Hyōdōkyō, is Musashi's first work. It is a work of his youth, written between the ages of 21 and 24. Two copies of it are extant today. Each is addressed to a different person and carries a different date. One of them is composed of 21 articles, and the other of 28 articles. I have given a partial translation of the latter. I have translated only the article titles of this work because its content is less developed than that of the Gorin no Sho, and it would seem repetitive here. The work is confined to the practice of the sword in individual combat, but the subject matter that would be developed in the Gorin no Sho is present in embryonic form. I consider this text a proof that Musashi was not self-taught. It seems impossible to me that a young man of 22, living in the conditions of his time, could have acquired the whole of the art of sword combat through his own experience and formulated it in such a systematic form. This text appears to me to be a proof that Musashi had received the general transmission of a school which could only have been that of his own family. This hypothesis is reinforced by the fact that in the 25th article, Musashi mentions the jitte, a weapon of which his father was a master. Thus, Musashi had already received a systematic teaching, which he tried to reproduce when he granted a certificate of transmission to his first student. 35 Instructions on Strategy. Hyōhō Sanju Gokajō. In 1641, 2 years before beginning to write the Gorin no Shō, Musashi wrote a work called 35 Instructions on Strategy. It was written for Lord Hosokawa, whose guest Musashi was. The Gorin no Shō can be considered an elaboration of this work. If we wish to get a closer idea of Musashi's thought, it seems essential to bring together these two works, which were written some years apart. We find several articles whose subject matter is identical, but with variations in expression and also some different ideas. Comparison of the two works is useful for an in-depth reading of the Gorin no Shō, because Musashi sometimes uses different words to express the same idea, which makes it possible to get a clearer impression of his meaning. However, in some cases, it is not clear whether Musashi was using a different word or whether a copyist's error has occurred. For example, jikitsu for jikido. We should not forget that Musashi's works were not intended for the public and that each of them was addressed to a specific person. This is something that should be borne in mind when comparing the two texts. For this reason, even if certain passages are repeated in both, it is not accurate to consider the Hyōhō Sanju Gokajō purely as a work preparatory to the Gorin no Shō. It has an original character of its own. The Gorin no Shō was written by Musashi for Lord Hosokawa Tadatoshi. At the end of his life, Musashi accepted the invitation of Hosokawa Tadatoshi, a lord of the south of Japan, Kyushu, to live at his court. But he was received there as his guest, not as his vassal. Lord Hosokawa practiced swordsmanship himself. In his youth, he had lived for several years in Edo, where he practiced the art of the sword of the Shogun Tokugawa school. From the principal master of this school, Yagyu Munenori, he received the transmission of the school's highest level of accomplishment. When he returned to his fief in Kyushu, he practiced the sword with a certain pride and self-confidence. When he received Musashi in his fief, he faced him himself in order to gauge his level. He was mastered in just a few seconds and immediately became aware of Musashi's exceptional ability. Hosokawa also greatly appreciated Musashi's great talent in a very broad range of activities. They were both about the same age and entered into a friendship of sorts in spite of their separation in the hierarchy. That is why Hosokawa received Musashi as a guest rather than a vassal, to take Musashi in and offer him a fixed income, as he would have done for a vassal, would have been in some sense to buy him at a certain price, whereas a guest is priceless. For this reason, Hosokawa refrained from offering Musashi a position as his retainer. Quickly persuaded of Musashi's qualities as an adept of strategy and as a man, Hosokawa became his student. After a year of practicing with Musashi, Lord Hosokawa had not succeeded in grasping the essence of his school, so he asked Musashi to compose a text to guide his practice. Musashi then began to compose the Hyōhō Sanju Gokajō, which he presented to the Lord a year later. In the translation that follows below, I confine myself to giving only the titles of those articles that more or less replicate ones in the Gorin no Shō. I have translated the others and, in my commentary, situated them in relation to the Gorin no Shō. To help understand the nature of this text, it should be pointed out that in his introduction, Musashi uses a special verbal form to express his respect for Lord Hosokawa. This is a nuance that is difficult to render in an English translation. I write for the first time here in your honor on my school of two swords, which is the result of many years of training. Considering that it is you I am addressing, this text is insufficient to communicate that which is difficult to say. It deals with how one must handle oneself with a sword in the strategy that you usually practice. I write below about the principal aspects of this in the way that they come to my mind. 1. Why I named my school School of Two Swords. The ideas in this article are presented again and further developed in the Scroll of Earth of the Gorinnosho. However, after explaining why he uses two swords and indicating that it is through training that one becomes capable of handling a heavy sword with ease, Musashi adds, among the people also, a sailor with a rudder or oars, or a farmer with a spade and a hoe, each in his way succeeds in accustoming himself to his action. You too can acquire strength through regular exercise. Nonetheless, it is appropriate for each person to choose a sword that corresponds to his strength. 2. The manner of understanding the way of strategy. The way is identical for group strategy and for individual strategy. I am writing here about individual strategy, but it is appropriate to look at this keeping in mind, to take an example, the image of a general. The limbs correspond to vassals, and the torso corresponds to soldiers and to the people. It is thus that one must govern the country and one's own body. In this sense, I say that the way is the same for group strategy and for that of the individual. To practice strategy, it is necessary to integrate the whole of one's body without having any imbalances. Nobody is strong and nobody is weak if he conceives of the body, from the head to the sole of the foot, as a unity in which a living mind circulates everywhere equally. 3. The way of holding the sword. After a brief description of the way of holding the sword, similar to that in the Gorinnosho, the Scroll of Water, Musashi continues, life and death exist for the sword as well as for the hand. When you adopt a guard position or parry an attack, if you forget to slash your opponent, your hand is going to forget an essential dynamic and will become fixed. That is what is called a dead hand. A living hand is one that does not become fixed in a gesture. You will then be at ease with the possibility of slashing properly, since both the sword and the hand will be adapting flexibly to successive actions. I call that living wrists. The wrist must not be slack. The elbow must not be too tense, nor too bent. A sword should be held with tension in the lower part of the arm muscles and relaxation in the upper part of these muscles. You should examine this well. 4. Posture. It is appropriate to hold the head neither lowered nor raised. The shoulders are neither raised nor contracted. The belly is forward, but not the chest. The buttocks are not drawn in. The knees are not fixed. The body is placed in a facing position so that the shoulders appear broad. The posture of strategy should be well examined so that it also becomes one's ordinary posture. 5. Movement of the feet. This section is nearly identical to the Gorinnosho, the Scroll of Water, the way of moving the feet. 6. The way of looking. This is almost identical to the Gorinnosho, the Scroll of Water, the way of looking in strategy. 7. Sizing up the ma. Different schools give different instructions on the way to assess the ma, but I find that they tend to fix or rigidify your strategy. That is why I advise you not to take into consideration what you have learned before. Whatever the discipline may be, it is by repeating exercises that you arrive at the point of being able to assess the ma. In general, you should think that when your sword reaches your opponent, he can also reach you. When you want to kill an opponent, you have a tendency to forget your own body. You must reflect well on this. Let us recall that ma is not exactly distance, but is a description of the space-time of a relationship. Ma also refers to the action of the mind by which this spatial and temporal phenomenon is grasped. In this text, Musashi is doubtless alluding to the habits acquired by Lord Hosoka in the Yagyu-ryu. 8. Regarding state of mind. The mind should be neither solemn nor agitated, neither pensive nor fearful. It should be straight and ample. This is the state of mind that should be sought after. The will should not be heavy, but the depth of one's awareness should be. In this way, you make your mind like water that reacts appropriately to shifting situations. Whether it is a drop or an ocean with blue depths, it is water. You should examine this well. 9. Knowing the three levels of strategy. Someone who adopts guard positions and strategy and displays different guard positions while handling the sword, sometimes slowly, sometimes fast, practices strategy of a low level. Someone who has refinement in strategy and who appears magnificent due to the subtlety of his techniques, who is a master of the cadences and has an elegant bearing, practices at an intermediate level. The supreme strategy appears neither strong nor weak, neither slow nor fast, neither magnificent nor bad, but broad, straight, and calm. You should examine this well. In Musashi's text, the three levels, low, intermediate, and high, or supreme, are expressed by the terms ge, low, chu, intermediate, and jo, high. When these words are associated, the usual order is jo, chu, ge. This expression refers to level or quality. 10. A graduated chord measure. You must always have a graduated chord measure in your mind. If you measure your opponent by adjusting the chord to him, you will be able to ascertain clearly his strength and weakness, his straightness and crookedness, where he is relaxed and where he is tense. With this measure, you must size up all aspects of your opponent, round, square, long, short, crooked, or straight. You should examine this well. A graduated chord measure. Itogane. Gane is the connecting form of the word kane, which means metal ruler. The expression refers to a chord that is used as a measure. 11. The pathway of the sword. Without knowing the pathway of the sword, you cannot handle it freely. You cannot properly slash your opponent if you put too much force into it, if you do not have a sense of the back and side of the blade, if you shake the sword around like a knife or a spoon for serving rice. You must train in hitting your opponent well, always knowing the pathway of the sword and moving it calmly, following its weight. 12. The strike and the hit. This is almost identical to the Gorin no Sho, the scroll of water. 13. The three kinds of sen. This is almost identical to the Gorin no Sho, the scroll of fire. 14. Getting past a critical passage. You often find yourself in a situation where you and your opponent can reach out and touch each other. In this situation, you strike. And if you see before finishing the strike that your opponent is in the process of avoiding your sword, get up as close as possible to him, moving your body and your feet. If you get past this critical moment, you are in no danger. For this, you must understand well what I have written concerning how to take the initiative. 15. The body replacing the sword. This idea is developed more completely in the Gorin no Sho, the scroll of water. 16. The two steps. You should move your feet in two movements, one foot then the other, in making a single strike. This is what I call the two steps. When you parry, pressing on your opponent's sword, or when you move forward or backward, You must move your feet in two steps, as though one foot were taking over from the other. If you move with a single step when making a strike, your body will be held by this movement, and it will be difficult for you to react immediately for the next movement. Ordinary walking is the basis for the two steps. You should examine that well. 17. Breaking the sword with your feet. This is almost identical to the Gorin no Sho, the scroll of fire. 18. Leaning on the shadow. Here is what I call leaning on the shadow. If you observe clearly what is happening in the body of your opponent, you can discern where his mind is excessively full and where it is absent. If you place your sword on the shadow of the place where his mind is absent, while at the same time vigilantly watching the place where it is overly full, your opponent's cadence will be disturbed, and your victory will be facilitated by this. Nonetheless, it is important never to miss a strike as a result of attaching your mind to your opponent's shadow. This must be worked out. 19. Moving your shadow. This idea is more completely developed in the Gorin no Sho, the scroll of fire. 20. Disconnecting the cord. There are situations in which it seems you are attached to your opponent by a cord that is pulling you together. At this point, you disconnect the cord. You must disconnect it without delay, as much with your body as with your sword, as much with your feet as with your mind. It will be easy for you to disconnect it if you make use of that which your opponent does not have in mind. This must be worked out. 21. The teaching of the small comb. The idea of the small comb is to disentangle. You have a small comb in your mind, and you should disentangle yourself each time your opponent snags you with a thread. Snagging with a thread and pulling with a cord are similar, but pulling is strong and snagging is weaker. You should examine that well. 22. Recognizing a gap in cadence. A void in a cadence should be discerned in relation to your opponent, who could be either fast or slow. When you are fighting a slow opponent, without moving your body at all and without letting him see the beginning of your sword movement, you strike him fast on the basis of the void. This is the cadence in one, ichi hyoshi, or hyotsu hyoshi. Against the fast opponent, you feint a strike with your body and with your mind. Your opponent will move, and you will strike after his movement. This is the double hyoshi for passing over the top, koshi. Your body is ready to strike. Your mind and your sword are kept back. You strike with force starting from the void. At the instant when a gap, ma, arises in the will of your opponent. This is the strike of non-thought, munen muso. When your opponent is ready to strike or parry, you make a striking movement that is deliberately slow, breaking the movement during its trajectory, and you strike at the point where a void, ma, appears in his attention. That is the delayed cadence, okure hyoshi. You should examine that well. The term ma is used here in the sense of a gap or a void in perception. 23. Holding down on the headrest. 24. Recognizing the state of things. 25. Becoming your opponent. The ideas in the previous three articles are developed more completely in the Gorin no Sho, the scroll of fire. 26. Holding and letting go of one's mind. Depending on the situation and the moment, you must either hold your mind or let go of it. In general, when wielding a sword, you must launch your will but hold on to the depth of your mind. When you strike your opponent with certainty, you must let go of your mind deep down and hold your will. These two states of mind, holding and letting go, can take on different forms depending on the situation. This must be worked out well. Holding the mind and letting go of the mind in Musashi's text translate zanshin and hoshin, respectively. These terms are used in contemporary martial arts. 27. The chance opening blow. 28. Paste and lacquer. 29. Body of the autumn monkey. 30. Competition in size. The ideas in the previous four articles are developed more completely in the Gorin no Sho, the Scroll of Water. 31. The door teaching, Toboso. When you are glued to your opponent, take a position in which you straighten up your body.